This is Amber Ray.
And Rusty Tanton.
You're listening to Mostly ITP on the Georgia Podcast Network, the show that has high hopes for 2016. In this episode, Marcos of Daily Kos, the most widely read political blog in the world, descended on Manuel's Tavern in Atlanta's Virginia Highlands District. Manuel's, for the out-of-towners listening to this recording, has been the premier watering hole for Democratic politicos since 1956. It was founded by Manuel Maloof, the godfather of Georgia Democratic politics.
Marcos was there to talk about the new book he co-authored with Jerome Armstrong titled Crashing the Gate, and to engage in a question and answer session with the audience about the state of progressive politics. The event was co-sponsored by Drinking Liberally and Georgia for Democracy, and we were there with buttons, and we recorded it, as you're about to hear.
My name is Charlie Grigsby. I'm from Atlanta, Drinking Liberally. And just, if you want some information about our group, we meet at Thinking Man Tavern, Thursdays at 8. It's in Decatur on West Howard. We have an email list, which you can sign up for here. There's a yellow notepad, and we also have some pens on the table as well. Thank you guys again for coming. This is Marcos that I know from Daily Kos. A friend of mine introduced me to his site many years ago, and it's got a million different users that go there every day. It's more users than CNN has viewers. So thank you guys.
Okay. Hello, thank you so much for coming. This is absolutely fantastic. This is my first time in Atlanta, and I don't think I've ever forgiven the city for stealing Greg Maddux from the Chicago Cubs, so. I'm a Cub fan, we don't get over anything. So, this is fantastic. This is week 7 of this book tour. It's a 9-week tour, so. You know, I had my stump speech, and I've had to throw it out because, you know, I don't know how people run for office. You know, I'd gouge my eyes out if I had to do that stump speech one more time, saying the same thing over and over and over again. So I'm changing things up a little bit. So if it's a little incoherent, please forgive me. First of all, I'd like to thank everybody who has bought the book. And if you haven't bought the book, it's keep in mind, and this is really a true story, that the right wing has so little going for them right now that the only thing they've got is the hope that this book does not sell well. Matt Drudge tracks the numbers, and he all, how many books has he sold? Nobody's buying his book. And so keep in mind that if you buy the book, a conservative cries. So. And no, it is good that I'm not running for office. I mean, a couple days ago, as I was kind of riffing, I was talking about the Terri Schiavo thing, that whole fiasco, and I was talking about how, you know, I can't believe Democrats didn't stand up for this issue. I mean, it's a brainless thing to do, right? And people groaned, and then I realized, okay, good thing I'm not running for office. I'll blog, where I can update things really quick if things are bad. So. You know what's really amazing about this, about what's happening in this tour and what's happening with Daily Kos and what's happening with the speaker? Yes, sir, please. Is this notion of people power. This is why, in so many different ways, we are under a lot of assault from people in government, from the media establishment, because for the first time, real people, average people, can have a say in their political system. They can have a say in media, and they can have a say in the activism realm. I mean, we've seen in politics with Howard Dean what Howard Dean was able to accomplish, a nobody governor from a nowhere state, and became the front runner. Hey, he is, come on. Who loves Vermont here? And any luck?
Maybe if you move it up more.
Is that microphone on right there?
Maybe if you move it up a little bit.
Where?
We move it forward.
Maybe here. Actually, It seems to be working. Okay. So Howard Dean, Paul Hackett last year running for the special election in Ohio, we showed that we didn't have to depend on the party to tell us who to run and why they should run, and we did not depend on them. And in fact, it was better when the party was not involved because candidates could be themselves. Howard Dean could not have been Howard Dean if he'd been backed by party money, by establishment money. Paul Hackett could not have been Paul Hackett had he been backed by party money. So suddenly we have a party that traditionally has been built around million-dollar donations, around appealing to millionaires and billionaires, having to be responsive to the rank and file of the party. And it's a very revolutionary notion. Republicans, we look at Republicans and we always get really jealous at how much Republicans are responsive to their base, right? It's because traditionally Republicans have been the party of the people. They have been a party built on small dollar donations, and if they did not respect those people, if they did not speak to those people, they could lose that money. Democrats, all they cared about is what Steven Spielberg and Barbara Streisand and a lot of big money cared and thought, and that those kinds of people are different than us. They don't have to worry about living paycheck to paycheck. Their priorities, however well-intentioned they might be, were not really the priorities of the American people. So we had a Democratic Party that lost touch with its moorings, lost touch with people, and now, because of campaign finance reform, led in large part by Russ Feingold. Thanks to campaign finance reform, the party has to be responsive to people again. And little by little, we're seeing Democrats that are more responsive, that want to fight, that realize that sitting back and being appeasers to an administration that has no interest in anything except destroying everything we believe and stand for isn't the way to go, and that they're going to stand up and be proud Democrats. And we now have the ability not just to support them financially. To me, the financial part is almost one of the least important parts, but we can get their back in the media. We can protect them from Fox News and Rush Limbaugh. We can support them. We can highlight them. We can say, hey, check out this governor in Montana, this governor in Schweitzer. This guy kicks serious ass, and we need to keep an eye on him, right? In the past, he's in Montana, for Christ's sake, right? Which was what we were saying about Howard Dean. He's in Vermont, for Christ's sake. I'm going to keep ragging on Vermont. Just because this table doesn't like it. And so in politics, clearly, people are starting to crash the gate. We're seeing it in the media. I mean, two weekends ago, we all saw Stephen Colbert. We saw Stephen Colbert not just criticize the president viciously, but he made a mockery, absolute mockery, of the assembled press, the Washington, D.C. press corps. Now, if you'd read the papers the next day, if you saw the coverage, you'd never know if Stephen Colbert even existed, right? It was all about how hilarious George Bush was making fun of himself. Just like a year ago, they thought it was so hilarious that he was looking for weapons of mass destruction under his desk, right? But when the guns were turned on them, they tried to shut it down. But, of course, in the past, it would have worked. A couple people, I mean, how many people were watching C-SPAN on Saturday night? Okay, losers. So a bunch of nerds in the past would have seen it and would have been like telling their friends, this was incredible. Now, things are a little different, right? Now you guys are the visionaries, right? You were there when it happened. And it's a different world. We were able to email it. I got four email forwards from my friends, kind of these mass emails, talking about it, urging people to go catch it. I tried to go to C-SPAN Sunday morning. The site was down. I'd never seen C-SPAN go down ever. Crooks and Liars had 300,000 downloads in 2 days. YouTube had 2.8 million downloads on those first 2 days. This is not including people who went straight to C-SPAN, right? We don't need those gatekeepers anymore to tell us what we can or cannot see. We can decide for ourselves. And this is a very dramatic shift in the landscape. It's making things much, much possible. I mean, it's amazing now how we talk about how the media only cares about sex scandals. Nothing else really matters, right? Right now, we have a sex scandal happening in D.C., and they still don't want to cover it. But we're going to make sure they cover those hookers, right? Hookers, hookers, hookers.
Gay or straight, we got to cover it.
Absolutely. It absolutely does not matter. And so that is dramatic shift. And now if you look at the activism landscape, once upon a time, you had to be somebody with activism credentials, like, say, Jesse Jackson, to really put together a big protest march or activism campaign. And if you didn't have those credentials, the world was kind of shut off from you. You couldn't really do activism unless you just joined an existing activism campaign. Now that is also dramatically changing. We see in the Daily Coast community, just in the last two years, we've seen very dramatic efforts like the Buy Blue campaign and the Boycott Sinclair. Sinclair wanted to run anti-Kerry documentary the day before the election. We were able to bring them down to their knees. And we, I mean, the collective community. And we have a Yearly Coast happening June 8 to 11, which already has 5 confirmed presidential candidates attending. 2 of them have been announced, Mark Warner and Tom Vilsack. And we're going to have more. And it's funny because now they're calling Gina Cooper as the organizer. They're calling her desperate to get on, right? And she can be, I can't even talk about this yet. Damn it. I can't pre-announce, but there's some pretty funny stories about just how desperate these people are to get on the panel after we invited them a couple of months ago and they had absolutely no interest, right? But this is all community-driven. It's not me doing anything. It's a bunch of really dedicated volunteers taking the initiative to put together this great conference that's going to have great, great people attending. So it's a different world. The infrastructure is being built. I like to say that I don't consider myself a leader, and I don't. What I consider myself is somebody who's building the infrastructure to identify and find the leaders and then support them. And we are limited. I mean, we're only 4 years old from inception, from nothing. We came from nowhere. 4 years old. And it took conservatives 30 years to go from zero, which was the Goldwater defeat, to the 1994 takeover of government. So they always looked and planned long-term, and we're going to be doing the same. We're looking and planning long-term, and we are going to identify those leaders, and we're going to build the institutions to train them. We're going to build the institutions to develop our message and mold it and package it into a marketable message. Then we're going to build the media institutions, not just the blogs. This is not a blog thing. We're going to build the radio. We're going to build the television and cable and all the different media outlets that will allow us to market our message, not just to the base of the Democratic Party, but to the American people at large. And we're going to eventually, and this is the hardest piece, eventually we're going to reform the Democratic Party. We're going to get rid of the consultant deadweight that's dragging us down, and we're going to start winning elections again. Thank you. So how are we going to do the questions? You got questions?
Okay. I think there's one.
Catherine, can you come for the podcast?
Are we going to try to test this mic out?
I'm going to start with two questions that are very similar, I think. I hope that everyone believes that. The internet is a fantastic tool for the grassroots formation of liberal and progressive ideas and messages. The downside seems to be the racial digital divide. Are you concerned about the political effect of this divide? How do you feel the divide has affected your blog content and community? But I'd also like to add this question because I think they're related. With many online and offline activities and groups, do you have a vision for how we bring everyone together for action as well as fun? So how do we build the progressive movement?
The digital divide is clearly an issue, and it's fairly stark in the blog world. I'm Latino, not a lot of other people like me at the top. What's interesting is I don't necessarily think that the blog world needs to be everything for everybody. I mean, one of the things that, this is fascinating statistics to me, is that the deepest penetration of cell phone usage in this country is in the African American community, and the second deepest penetration is in the Latino community. And the immigration rallies that happened a couple of weeks ago were planned in large part over cell phones, people instant messaging themselves over cell phone and communicating. So there are technologies that that reach into communities that maybe your traditional internet does not. And so when I talk about building the netroots, it's not the blogs and blogs and blogs, and we need the blogs to represent everybody. To me, it's making sure that technology is available to reach every community and allowing them to use that technology to organize. And I think that's happening, which is what really is encouraging to me.
You state in Crashing the Gate that we must move away from single-issue politics if we are to win elections, yet the first session at your yearly COAST meeting is the special interest caucuses. How do we get Democrats to realize that they must represent all American interests and not one at a time?
And you know what's funny is I'm not an organizer. I've been helping, advising, but I'm not an official organizer. The issue groups still want more, right? You know, Planned Parenthood and NARAL, they want more. It's why aren't they represented? And don't you care about this community as though they're the, you know, they're the people who speak for that community and nobody else does. And it's clearly a problem. I'm starting to see some places we're seeing change, some places we're not. I mean, we were down in Texas where all the Texas-based issue groups, all the Texas chapters of NARAL and Planned Parenthood and Sierra Club and League of Conservation Voters and a bunch of others agreed to share their membership list, which I've never seen groups or organizations do. This is like their most prized possession. And they agreed to share the membership list because, as the NARAL representative told me, at this point, what do we have to lose? It's Texas. It's Texas. Although, you're Georgia. I wouldn't be talking too much shit. So... But, you know, then I was in Illinois, where it's a blue, very solid blue state, and there the issue groups were complaining, well, we got Democrats in power, and they still don't listen to us. And I asked, well, when was the last time you primaried one of these Democrats? And he said, oh, well, we don't primary Democrats. And I said, well, why not? I mean, because they're incumbents, they're hard to beat. Yeah, but you send a message. Look at us. We're primarying the vice presidential nominee for the Democratic Party in 2000. We're gunning for him, which is Joe Lieberman, and nobody gets a pass. And how can you expect anybody to be responsive to your needs and what you want if you don't cause a little pain every once in a while? I mean, nobody wants to be the Joe Lieberman of 2008. Nobody. And they'll say Joe Lieberman will probably, he's an incumbent, right? He's got more money, name recognition, and so on. If he feels like he can't get the Democratic nomination, he's going to become an independent, and then he definitely cannot beat him as an independent because all the Republicans love him in Connecticut. So then people are going to say, look at those bloggers. Once again, they lost, right? You know, we're taking a long view. Nobody's going to want to be Joe Lieberman in 2008. Nobody wants to be targeted in that way. And as we grow as a movement, we're going to be able to do so more, both at the federal level and as a state level. I mean, I definitely want to stress the importance of the local bloggers, the local blogging scene, because to me, that's the future of blogging. That's where all the energy is going to come. That's where all the real activism is going to come. In Seattle, the Seattle area bloggers decided to get together and band together for a congressional candidate named Darcy Berner. I'd never heard of her, completely out of the radar screen nationally, right? She's a nobody, essentially. They raised $90,000 for her the last 2 days before the first quarter filing period. I don't think Daily Coast has ever raised that much for anybody except John Kerry, directly. $90,000. There's real money out there, and it doesn't take a lot of people to raise $90,000. I mean, we're talking, 1,000 people. That's all it takes. So the local bloggers, and what they do is they coordinate with each other. They have a Google group. They talk to each other. They have a lot of meetups. And they really become a very cohesive, active group. And I don't know if you guys here in Georgia are like that, but if not, I would urge you to start doing that, start organizing, because you can serve as that megaphone in a way that really the liberals do not have. We definitely don't have it at the federal level, but we doubly do not have it at the state levels.
Well, you actually answered the next question, which was, how can the blogging community avoid becoming another special interest group? So if we work together.
Yeah, but the other thing about bloggers is that there's a clear generational divide in the progressive movement between people who came into politics before the 2000 election and people who came after. Before 2000, people are used to being in the, Democrats are used to having at least one level of government. They want to be conciliatory. They want to compromise and negotiate and debate, not understanding that post-2000, the current Republican regime has no interest whatsoever in negotiating and compromising, right? In fact, they view those things as a weakness, right? So in 2002, every single Democrat that voted for George Bush's tax cuts was specifically targeted and ousted. Because to them, if somebody voted for Bush's tax cuts, it was because they were weak. And so there's a generational divide. Those who came of politically of age, and I'm not talking, you know, age as in when you were born. I'm talking politically of age. A lot of us came in politically of age in 2000 after the Bush stole the election. Or 2003 with Howard Dean kind of exciting a lot of people, right? We don't know what it's like to be in the majority, right? We have been a minority our entire political existence, the last 6 years. So we want a party that will fight and be active and be a true opposition party. Now, if you look at the groups that have arisen since 2000, Democracy for America and the bloggers and MoveOn. MoveOn was before, but really they came of age after 2000. And National Political Hip Hop Conference and Progressive Democrats of America and so on. They're all multi-issue movement building organizations. There's a realization that we cannot sit there and do the old model of, you know, here's the women's groups and the gay groups and the environmentalists. We can't keep that up and win, because it's such a cliche, but really, truly, in politics, united we stand and divided we fall. And so the new generation of activists understands this, and we're willing to paper over differences on specific issues here or there for the broader movement. So there's still a huge segment of the progressive movement, obviously, that doesn't understand that, and they still want people to kowtow to their special interests, and they're not happy, and it'll work against you if you don't profess, in their language, fealty to their issues. We had a candidate in Texas in 2004 named Richard Morrison, who was running against Tom DeLay, and he received pretty much all of his money from the bloggers, and he essentially showed Democrats that Tom DeLay was vulnerable. I mean, that's his legacy. He kept DeLay to 55% of the vote. But at a candidate forum, Morrison was asked about abortion by one of the women's groups, and he said, well, I'm pro-life, but I'm libertarian on the issue. Right, which is just, I'm not gonna, you know, if I personally think it's not, you know, it's yucky, that's my personal belief, that's my ethics, I'm not gonna sit there and have government impose, right, which I think is a perfectly reasonable, and for the women's choice groups, that's perfect, you know, that's what you want. You want people to say government does not belong in people's doctor's offices, right? It wasn't good enough for them, right? And they worked against them, and they made a big stink, and that's the kind of thing that kills us, you know, compared to the Republicans who are willing to say, we'll talk in code. You don't have to, you know, we know you'll take care of us. And so, you know, we remember the debate a couple years ago where George Bush was going on and on about how great the Dred Scott decision was, right? We're all like, welcome to the 21st century, you know? And not realizing that that was code in the anti-abortion movement. That's their legal foundation for the abolition of a criminalization of abortion. You know, he was talking in code. He didn't need to use blatant language. And we need to be better at, one, talking, you know, listening to code, like I'm a libertarian on that issue. And we need to be better about saying, well, you know, I'll disagree with the guy on the one issue. But when we have a movement, we have a Democratic majority, most of those issues that we disagree on aren't going to come to the table, like anti-criminalizing abortion and gay marriage bans and, you know, all sorts of crazy shit like that.
Okay. How do we convince the rank-and-file religious right that the Republican Party does not follow moral principles associated with Jesus?
Well, there's a couple of things. One is a lot of those voters are lost. They are lost. So, you know, I don't know how much energy. What I'd like to see more of is a concerted effort with the religious left to try to take back the religion. Because what these religious right are doing is... I mean, the religious right is turning religion into a tool of hatred and of distrust and division. And that's not what religion is supposed to be. And so the religious left is starting to organize. And in a lot of ways... I think the bigger problem, I don't think we're going to get these votes. We never will. I think what's going to happen is the religious right is destroying religion and how people feel about religion. It's up to the religious left to kind of fight that battle. So I'll leave that to them. But that said, there are signs that, and a lot of this is anecdotal, but we are seeing signs that a lot of people in the evangelical movement are trying to tune out of politics. I mean, there's always been this notion in kind of fundamentalist circles that you have to stay away from secular life because it's corrupting to the soul, in politics especially, very corrupting to the soul. And Ralph Reed and company convinced them that they needed to become involved politically. And now who are the people going down are those very same people. People like Ralph Reed are going down in because of rampant corruption. So it's there is a lot of signs that a lot of those evangelical voters are really starting to kind of say, oh, politics, even Ralph Reed, our golden boy, has been corrupted by this. This is horrible, and they're trying to become, not to mention that they really haven't gotten everything that they were promised, bans on abortion and so on. So they're tuning out. So I don't think we're going to get them, but I hope that more and more of them realize that politics isn't for them and that, they can go mind their own business somewhere else and leave us fuck alone.
One last question. If I were going to donate $200 to candidates, how best should I spend my money? I've already donated to Ned Lamont, Francine Busby, and Nick Lampson from your website.
Sitting wants me to say him. Here's what I say. It's we talk about wanting Democrats that stand for something strong, really strong progressive, that know who they stand for and what they believe in, and are going to be great representatives for us, and help build a Democratic Party brand and help build their message and blah, 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 and so on, right? That's what we want. And the place to find those people really is in the lowest of the local elections. It's find these people and encourage them. Not a lot of money can go a long way and start building that farm team. And as these people grow and they come up, they build their fundraising network. They build their volunteer network. They get their name recognition up. They make connections with the local media so they can talk to people. They know they can call somebody and get their phone picked up. Because right now what's happening is that there is no farm team. We've decimated the Democratic Party in all the 50 states. And so when we have a congressional election, an open seat opens up, we had some millionaire run for the seat, or somebody who's well-connected because they're part of the establishment. We need to start building these people at the lowest levels. I say young, I don't mean age again. Build them really, get them early, start to build them at the local level and promote them. So I would find somebody at the local level that really is inspiring and seems like that good progressive you all want, and give that $200. You? Stand up. State House, okay. $200 right there. Uh-oh, another one. Oh, okay, you guys fight it out.
108.
Arm wrestling. So, but that's the key, is think local and remember that this is it took Republicans 30 years to get to where they are today. Think long term and help build the institutions and help build the personalities and the leaders of this movement, because this isn't a movement that's going to culminate in 2006. We're still operating under the old rules, the Rahm Emanuel, Chuck Schumer rules, where who you know and how much money you have is more important than what you believe in and how good of a leader you are. So, but we're stuck with that for now. And we're going to be stuck with that 2008 and probably 2012. But people ask, how encouraged are you, or how optimistic are you about 2008? And I say, I'm really, really, really optimistic about 2016. Because that's the date I've got circled in my calendar when everything that we've been doing needs to start paying off. That's the date. So let's start looking at 2016 as a date that we build a new progressive movement.
I'd like to take a quick moment to give you a Georgia for Democracy bag, and there's some other hoo-ha in there. So thank you very much.
Thanks for Georgia for Democracy and drinking liberally. These are institutions that are focused on building movement. They're not focused on single issues. And let's support them and let's build for the future. Thanks so much.
You can visit Daily Coast at dailycoast.com, Drinking Liberally at drinkingliberally.org, and the Georgia for Democracy blog at blogfordemocracy.org.
Thanks for listening to Mostly ITP on the Georgia Podcast Network. Visit us at gapodcastnetwork.com. If you know a Georgia band or a hippie with a guitar that would like to have their music featured in a podcast, have them contact us at info@gapodcastnetwork.com. This way, the ending of the shows won't seem so abrupt.